Welcome to Monday Morning Moments, a weekly podcast dedicated to helping you make the most of the moments in your life. I'm your host, Mike Van Hooser. Today we're going to be interviewing John Duplantier, a third-round pick of the Arizona Diamondbacks, who is currently on assignment with the Kane County Cougars outside of Chicago. John played football and baseball for Seven Lakes High School in Katy, Texas, and played collegiate baseball as a starting pitcher for the Rice Owls. I've known John for a very long time and have watched him grow, develop, and work hard to maximize his potential and achieve his goals so far. He is a true leader on and off the field, and I look forward to hearing him share his story and journey so far today on our podcast. John, welcome to Monday Morning Moments. How are you doing?
Thank you. I'm doing great. Yourself?
I'm doing great. Doing great. I appreciate you being on here today. And I just wanted to go through some questions. I really think your story is unique. I think it's one of hard work, of leadership, of great parental influences and mentors, and somebody who's just stayed focused, you know, throughout. We've known each other a long time, so I look forward to chatting with you today.
Yes, sir.
Tell me about, I've seen you and we've competed against you in different sports, but share with our audience what sports you played growing up.
Well, growing up, kind of playing a little bit of everything. Started off with basketball, and that brought me into baseball, and going and watching a friend's practice brought me into football. So I kind of played it all growing up, starting, I guess, roughly, say, around second grade was kind of when I got into everything. And there was really just, it was just whatever season it was, you know. We went overseas a couple times, and we're overseas, they didn't have football. So instead of football, we just substituted soccer and kept rolling. And so, yeah, it was fun, just a little bit of everything.
How did those experiences prepare you for where you are now as far as playing multiple sports and the lessons you learned through those sports?
Well, I guess guys that play multiple sports growing up or girls who play multiple sports growing up, there's different lessons in each sport. There's different... different responsibilities players have. So in football, it's not really an eye game. It's not an individual sport. It's no matter what position you are, you do your job to benefit the other 10. Basketball, it's different than football. There's four of the guys that you got to work around and work with, and it's a malleable court, and everything's flowing, and you kind of get used to that, and you got to prepare differently for that than when you're playing baseball. In baseball, it's one pitch, it's 8 seconds of concentration, and then you're aloof for 35 seconds. I took so many different lessons from different sports, and each of those are still being practiced today. I like that, and I think a lot of coaches along the way enjoyed that. And they still see that. You can tell at my level which guys have only played baseball their entire life, or you can tell which guys played. You can definitely tell which guys played football. That's probably the easiest one.
Sure, that's great. Yeah. When did you know that you had a shot to play college baseball and potentially professional baseball as well?
Both about at the same time. I guess when my junior season in high school, I grew. I wasn't always a taller kid. I grew, I guess you'd say, late compared to most. But I grew before my junior year, and they switched me to first base and pitcher. So I pitched some more, which I hadn't done in previous years. And so when I started pitching, all of a sudden, guys are like, hey, you gonna play college ball? Or coaches would come, scouts would, college coaches kind of inquire about me. And then more so professional scouts, just because I went so long under the radar that professional baseball took an interest in me. They were just curious about me. So it was about when I was like 17 years old is when I guess I started thinking about it, because it became a real possibility.
Right. And I find that so interesting, because there's such an emphasis on specializing in sports And we see it more and more. I mean, you know, I've got five boys, and so throughout all of them, it seems like the specialization has gotten earlier and earlier as far as parents and coaches and dads who are coaching, trying to focus on getting people to specialize sooner in a certain sport. And they feel like if by the age of nine they haven't become a premier pitcher, that, you know, their whole future is lost. And yet here you are sharing about how the benefit of sports and multiple sports has helped you, and how it wasn't until about 16 or 17 that you really got switched to pitcher and found out there might be a future in that. So it's a great, I think, story. What advice would you give to parents and also to young athletes about playing multiple sports and also not worrying about, say, specializing when they're 9 or 10?
I mean, I'm totally against it, specializing. I'm totally against it, except in the rare case where you probably got 1 in 1,000 kids that when you specialize, that's what they were going to be. That's what they're going to be. I mean, they showed you from get-go that they want a baseball. They don't want a football. They right. never wanted a basketball. They don't want to kick a soccer ball. They want a baseball. And you can't even convince them to try. That's the only case where I could say, well, all right, but the benefits to me greatly outweigh the consequences of specializing. I don't know. It's just, you don't know. I don't know. I didn't know I was a baseball player. I thought I was a football player until I was 17. You know?
Yeah, and you were good at that too. Yeah.
I was a football player. Everybody thought I was a quarterback who liked to play baseball with his friends in the spring. In the summer, I was a football player. In the fall, I was a football player. And then once December hit and our season was over, I picked up a baseball for the first time and had fun doing that. But, I mean, specializing, you're just missing out on so many lessons on different functional movements if you want to get into the physical aspect of it. The physical aspect and my theory on injury and whatnot. I feel like I never had arm injuries growing up. I was always throwing something. I never took a time off from throwing. I was always throwing something.
But using different mechanics and working different muscles for that, right?
Right. It was a football half the year, and then baseball when it was baseball season, and then if it wasn't football or baseball season, it was basketball season. I was the guy late in the game throwing the bomb passes with the basketball. So,
right.
I feel like throwing each different ball developed different muscles in their own way, strengthened muscles in their own way, and it wasn't until I stopped throwing different balls in different ways, and I only started throwing a baseball. That's the first time I ever had an arm injury.
Sure.
Because I was so used to throwing so many different balls, I didn't need to do all this arm care to compensate for the muscles that I wasn't using when I was throwing a baseball.
Right.
And so in terms of specializing, I mean, you're just starting that process earlier.
Yeah.
You're just putting the responsibility of, man, I have to have my 9-year-old doing arm care, my 10-year-old doing arm care.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's why, potentially that could be why the Tommy John rate is, and the arm injuries in youth baseball is creeping up so high.
Right.
Kids aren't doing as much anymore.
Right, exactly. There was a great article in the Wall Street Journal this week about Gordon Hayward for the Utah Jazz, who made the All-Star team this year, had a 40-point playoff game recently, and most people where he grew up know him as a tennis player, and he's still a really good tennis player today. But one of the things, he didn't grow until high school, and they said, well, maybe you have a potential in basketball. But he said one thing he learned from tennis was mental toughness and being able to have that play-by-play. And I'm sure that you grew mentally through different situations. Could all the sports you mentioned, basketball and football, put you in different situations that provide a level of mental toughness being a pitcher as well? Tell me a little bit about your definition of leadership and how you've led. You're a pitcher now. You said you've been a quarterback. What are some lessons? How do you define leadership, and what are some lessons that you've learned about leadership both on and off the field?
My definition of leadership, because we've had that course, you know, and I feel like it changes every couple months. It's just a tick here and there. And right now I define a leader is somebody who can assess a situation and determine what a team, what a person, or any group needs to be successful in that situation, and can get that point across to unite everybody. I mean, it's different. It's been different for me since I left college. It's different. You come in after you get drafted, and it's a weird dynamic because I was a high draft pick. And so in my draft class, I was kind of portrayed as a leader. So guys could look up to me, but at the same time, we're all grown men, and there's a pride factor in there. It's not like in college when you come in and you got freshman, sophomore, junior, and senior. And so naturally everybody just looks at the seniors and the bigger guys. And so, I mean, now it's less about kind of enforcing things for me. In professional baseball, it's less about enforcing things rather than setting an example for people that I know or I think potentially may need an influence. Like, we have a lot of Dominican players, a lot of Latin guys.
Yeah.
And they're 16 years old. And so they make it over here by usually around 18, 19 years old. And, I mean, it's hard for them here. They don't have any direction of where, how to get around, how to speak the language. It's difficult for them. So, I mean, I've kind of taken it upon myself to learn Spanish. My Spanish is getting pretty good, and I mean, I have a couple young Dominican guys that I look out for, and kind of just talk to, make sure that they know that they're good, they're all right. It's a scary place, but they're gonna be all
right. Right, right. And when I hear you saying that, that's great. You've taken an interest in them and recognizing that it's not just about baseball, but it's about life. But I hear, you know, the influence by the model that you set, and also investing when people are open to that, investing in them on and off the field is very important. How important is trust? Because as a pitcher, you know, in baseball, it's all the sports that you mentioned, there's a different layer and level of trust and way trust is, you know, exhibited. As a quarterback, you're relying on your line to block for you, to give you time to create a play. In baseball, you're relying on the defense to back you up and have your back so that you don't have to press and do things that are not normal. How important is trust in baseball and also in leadership?
Well, in baseball, it's as a pitcher, it's pretty much all we got once we release that ball, you know. Every pitch I throw, the catcher gives me a sign, or the coach might throw in a call a pitch, and I gotta trust in them that it's a good call. I gotta trust in myself that and trust in what my ability and throw that pitch with conviction. And then once I release that ball, I gotta trust that my defense can handle whatever's thrown at them. That they'll go chase it down, go over the wall, pick it back, bring it back for me, you know. And then I gotta trust that the hitters are going to go and score some runs, give me a little breathing room. So I feel like trust is pretty much all is the constant thing that you have in baseball. Trust, a little bit of faith, and belief in your guys. Then in leadership, probably more so, you know, more so, because trust is, it's hard to earn. It's real easy to lose.
Yeah. Definitely.
Belief in somebody. So, as a leader, I mean, you have a real responsibility to your sphere of influence, a duty to be trustworthy and dependable. And if your sphere believes that they trust in you and believe that you're not gonna steer them wrong, you're looking out for them, you really do love them, and you want what's best for them and for the group, then something real good can happen.
Right, exactly. Well, and I know you're making a difference there with that. I remember after you came through our Invisible Hand of Leadership work program and retreat at Rice and went through that, that you had called me up that summer. I think that was going to be your last year at Rice, and
yeah,
wanted to develop some core values and have it player-driven, not coach-driven, and really some leadership behaviors on and off the field that you wanted the team to be about. I'm sure you're doing that there with your team. You've had a great season so far, and it could have been maybe a better start and maybe getting a little bit more run production, but I think 20, which is always nice as a pitcher, right? But
yeah.
I think 28 strikeouts, you haven't allowed a run yet, had some eight strikeout games, six strikeout games as well. So congratulations on everything that you're doing. What has been the key to your success? I mean, You kind of joined at the end of the season last year. You come into spring training, then you get your assignment. Talk about that process and then being ready to say, okay, here's where I'm going. Here's what I'm going to focus on. How did you go about that process coming into spring training and getting prepared to have such a great start?
Well, you know, the funny thing is the whole offseason. So we started the offseason October 17th. That was the first day I worked out. And I worked out 4 days a week, every week until spring training. I mean, until the day I left. And I mean, I put in a lot of work. I'm proud of the work that I put in. But right before I left for spring training, I was just thinking back on it, and I was looking towards spring training. I was nervous. I had a gut feeling. I was nervous, and I didn't know why I was nervous. I didn't know why. I believe in myself. I believe in the work. And especially when I go 4 months of putting in a lot of sweat. I mean, a lot of sweat. I always come out with this unbelievable confidence. I'm just on top. If I feel like I'm stronger than you, then I beat you already. You know, and I was nervous. I was apprehensive about the whole thing. And so, I mean, I've always been religious. I've tried to be. My family's religious. We go to church and everything. But, like, I took it upon myself to really look a little bit deeper inside myself and kind of just give it up and just start to believe that, you know, God's going to handle it. Wherever I'm going to be, I'm going to be. And I'm gonna make that work, do what I can there, and the rest will be handled by someone that I can't outwork, you know. So
right.
To be honest, I'm just stress free. That's it. I'm stress free. I'm working stress free right now. I'm having fun, and it's all due to I don't put any pressure on myself. I just put in my work, and I say, you know what, today I'm just going to go out there and I'm going to take my 30 minutes of focus, put it towards what I need to do today to be good at baseball, and then to be try to show how God's working in my life.
Right.
And it'll be handled.
Right.
It'll be handled. Well, I mean,
that's a great word. I think, and you know, I think that trusting. I hear you saying trust the preparation, because you look back and you look on that, and then ultimately give the results to God. You're not worrying about outcomes. You're trusting the process and the preparation, the hard work that you put in, and just trying to maximize who you are every day and being active in that process, and then faith playing a huge part in that, and just trusting God with the results, knowing that you're active in that process as well. And that's a great lesson for baseball and a great lesson for life, right?
Right. I mean, it's made a huge difference. Not having given up an earned run yet. I've given up one. I made an error and the guy got around, but it's unearned.
Right.
That not giving up an earned run in my professional career yet and all this stuff, it's cool, and guys want to whisper about it. They really don't want to talk about it because they think they're going to jinx me.
Right.
I don't believe in all those superstitions anymore. Sure. I still have a little quirkiness to me because I'm a baseball player.
Sure.
That's part of the game, and the fans like it, and we like it, but I can step on the line. You know, I'm not worried. I'm never worried about, oh man, I get up a hit in four innings. Like, I can't. Nah, it's handled.
Right.
It's handled. There's no more tension. There's no more fear. I have no reason. I feel no reason to be afraid.
Right. That's great.
Yeah, I do. So it's been good.
That's great, John. Well, tell me a little bit about what life as a minor league baseball player is. I mean, I think, you know, we've talked about different aspects of it. I think people glorify that, you know, as well, or don't really understand. You know, you're a professional at this point, so this is your job. I'd love to hear you're having fun with it, and that's very important. You're playing a sport, right, at the end of the day, which you love to play.
Right.
Talk a little bit about your day as a minor league baseball player, just a baseball player in general.
Yes, I mean, today, just we're in the middle of the season now. We have a 6:30 game, so today's a little bit different because we had that late road trip, so we didn't get it until about 3:00 this morning. So, but on a normal day where we've been here, it's say the second game of a series at home, 6:30 game. I don't have to be at the field until 2:30 if I'm not pitching. So I'll wake up naturally. I don't set any alarms anymore. I wake up usually around 8, 9 o'clock, get some breakfast. Then where I'm at, I'm staying with the host family, and they're in a neighborhood. Kind of like Grayson Lake. So then most days I'll go fishing. So I'll wake up, eat breakfast, might go fishing a little bit in the lake, pond, grab some lunch, and on the way to the field, and then go to work. And that's pretty much every day. It's a grind. It's every day, but there's a lot of downtime. So as long as you can figure out what to do with your downtime and not get, just in a trance with, man, I don't know what to do, and you're just sitting there for hours, it's not that bad. It's pretty, especially if you're having fun with the base out the field. So
right,
it's long bus trips. I'll say that.
I know people may think you're traveling on Lear jets and everything, right? But you got bus trips now, right?
Yeah. I mean, we just got back from a 7-day road trip. We went to Cedar Rapids, Iowa, and Appleton, Wisconsin. So two places I've never been before. And, you know, that's how it is for most of us.
Sure.
And it's sharing a seat on the bus for 3 hours, get off, go to work for 3 days, hop on the bus for 4 hours, go to work for a couple days, and hop on the bus for 3 more, share a seat, and come back. You know,
right. No wonder your Spanish has gotten better. I mean, you're spending a lot of time on the bus trying to learn teach each other English and Spanish.
You'd assume it kind of, there's a divide. All Latin guys, Spanish speakers kind of hang out together just because the language is easier. It's just easier to talk to people and stuff. So me and another guy who was drafted with me, we try and hang out with them as much as we can so we can pick up Spanish and, I mean, just get to know guys, you know?
Sure. Right.
Just get to know guys. It's been really fun.
That's great.
It's an awful lot.
That's great. What advice would you give to kids as you think back on, you know, your youth sports days and who want to play high school, want to play college and possibly professional sports, as they think about a vision 3 years, 5 years, maybe for now, what advice would you give maybe to parents and to kids who may have some aspirations around playing at a higher level?
Take it seriously. And I don't say that like as if most people don't, but I know like in high school when I was playing football. And I mean, I'm a competitive guy, so I wanted to win. And there are guys on the team who wanted to win. There are also a lot of guys on the team who weren't necessarily there to be good at football. They just wanted to hang out. They wanted to hang out with their buddies. Everybody, their buddies were playing football, so they played football too.
Right.
And then when the time came, and they looked back on it, they said, "Well, hey, I might have had enough talent to do this." And then they try, and it don't really work out in their favor. So just in terms of that, like, take it seriously, work hard, but like, don't take the fun out of it. If it ever stops being fun, it's not gonna end well. You may make it so far, but if you're not having fun, it's hard to go far playing a sport because it is a game. It's a game. And it's a game with people who put their pants on just like you. So usually whoever, if you work as hard as somebody else and y'all work the same, y'all work out just as hard as each other, and the other guy has more fun, he's got you beat.
Right.
Because he's having more fun. There's another gear, so to speak. If you're a six-gear car, you can get up to five with work. You can get up to five with work and in health and in good weather, but then all of a sudden, there's that sixth gear that's hard to get to. You can get to it when you're having fun,
right?
And I mean, that's what I want. You just gotta have fun.
Sure,
everybody gotta have fun. And for parents, we got young kids. Let them play. Just let them play. They want to play sport. Let them play, and have fun with them. And then when you start to see that they're taking it seriously, start taking seriously with him. That's what my dad did with me. He was real hard on me early on. He was real hard on me. And it got to the point where I just told him, "I'm done. I'm not having fun anymore. Why are you always yelling at me?" I was young. I didn't really care that much. That, you know, it was one of those things where it's like, you're just yelling at me all the time. I'm never doing anything good enough. I got a base hit. I went 1-for-3 today. Well, you're mad because it wasn't a double. Could have stretched into a double. I'm 10 years old, you know?
Right.
Yeah, but as soon as you see that your kid is mad about it, man, I should have had a double. And jump them. Jump
right.
They're ready.
Right. Well, I imagine that was a great conversation for you and your dad to have at that point, because it probably evolved into something that was very constructive for your whole family, who's been very supportive of you, including your siblings, and to keep it fun, and they knew and realized over time that you were working hard and stewarding the talent and the opportunities that you had.
Oh, yeah, my family's been behind me 100% of the way. I can't thank them enough. I mean, my mom made my first inning, my first professional outing this past summer. And then she made my first start here on day two. So and she found that out. She found out I started that game, I want to say, 3 or 4 days before the actual start. So she just, they're like, "Oh, we got to buy a ticket. Send her up here." So, I mean, I know it hasn't been easy. It's been a lot of things on the whim.
Sure.
But, they've been behind me 100% of the way, and I just want to find a way to repay them somehow.
Yeah, well, I think you are by just maximizing your opportunities, John. It's I always see her posting some pictures from the field on Instagram or Facebook, so I love those and seeing that. Talk a little bit about, as we round out the interview, who are some of your mentors, and what have you learned from them? It could be even peers that you've seen, because I know you've got some close friends who are playing professional sports as well, but just some mentors in your life and what you've learned from them.
Well, I mean, I got to, just the first person that came to my head, of course my dad, you know, and it wasn't even anything really physical. He just always in my life, he's had this clear mind, this ability to take a situation, a dilemma, an experience, and then to take it and be able to analyze it and kind of look at it with pure objectivity. I mean, I and then help me do the same when I'm not really always, I'm not like that. I'm not like that. I'm kind of more emotional, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
I'll see something and I'll take it the wrong way, or I won't take it the right way. I'll just take it a different way than it was intended, or maybe it wasn't even intended for anything, you know? And so that's been a big part of this for me. That's helped a lot. And just being able to have that has been, it's been cool my life. In baseball, you know, I had two great pitching coaches by the time I was 10 years old, 11 years old. Mike Capel, a good friend, or dad of a great friends of mine, known since kindergarten. The middle son is playing with the Indians now. He got drafted in the fifth round last year. Just a good baseball family. He played in the big leagues, and he talked to us a lot when we were growing up about baseball and how to respect the game and what to work on, because not everybody can be a 95-mile-an-hour throwing guy. He told us we were never going to blow by anybody, so we need to work on our off-speed, our command, our location. And so that's still practicing that today, you know?
Right.
Roger Clemens was another pitching coach on the same team. Just being around him at a young age was cool, and you got to see how hard he worked out. No matter what people say, he worked out like an animal. He treated the game like with the utmost respect, and he was probably one of the fiercest competitors that I personally know. So that just is a cool lesson in itself for young kids, you know?
Right.
And then peers, I got Zach LeMond when I was at Rice. He was a junior, and he signed in the third round with the Padres that year. And he sat me down, I want to say, halfway through my freshman year, and he kind of gave me this joking, this like halfway kind of a joke ultimatum. And he said, if you're not throwing 100 miles an hour by the time you get drafted or leave here, you didn't work hard enough. And I mean, I think about that all the time. If I want to slack, I remember Zach telling me that, because the thing is, he worked out hard, and then he saw me and realized that there's potential in me, and he kind of challenged me to do the same. And then I took that upon myself when Zach was gone, and I saw Glenn Otto, and I did the same thing with Glenn. And then Glenn, he better do it with somebody else, you know? it's like Zach started this,
yeah,
this legacy, this chain reaction of hard work. And I thank him for that.
That's that invisible hand of leadership. Be invisible in a person's life and investing so that they do the same, you know, to other people, right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's funny. A lot of my baseball, and Blake Fox, he was in the program, wasn't he?
Yes, he was.
Fox is probably, if there's like anybody, like a physical person, that I could give credit to the success I'm having right now, it's probably Blake. Even though he didn't really help me physically at all, him being left-handed, he couldn't show me different grips, and we didn't have the same repertoire. I'm more of a power guy in college. He's more finesse, trick guy, and he's very good, really good at what he does, and it was cool to talk to him because he's a student of the game. He's a student of life. He loves life. And being around B, Blake, you can't leave from hanging out with B and be a worse person. I don't believe that.
Right.
So, I mean, just the way that he used to talk about struggling in college and how it didn't bother him because he was looked over, he was watched, he was taken care of by God and everything. I tried, and I didn't really know what he meant until about right now.
Hmm.
And so, I mean, I credit B a lot in terms of my growth in college. I mean, the last game we played together, I lost my marbles. I was crying like a baby, man. It was because I realized that potentially never again would I have Blake in the same dugout, the same locker room to look towards you, you know? He was a very, very positive influence.
Right.
And I need to call him and tell him that because I don't think I have.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, and I know, you know, his spirit, his, you know, impact, imprint in your life has made a difference and will continue on. And the biggest thank you you give to him besides calling him or sending him a text is to, you know, to definitely pass that on. And you are, John, and just continue to live that. Final question for you. Just talk a little bit about challenges in life and if anybody's facing a challenge, maybe a little bit about biggest challenge you've ever faced and what you've learned from that about perseverance, about resilience, maybe about faith as well.
Yeah. My sophomore year is probably the most publicized one. And
this was at Rice? At Rice?
Yeah, Rice. Yeah. My sophomore year at Rice. I dealt with a shoulder injury. And I like talking about it, especially in situations like this, because I learned a lot of lessons about baseball, about your body, about how you treat your body, and how personally the biggest one was I found joy in other things than baseball. Before that, a lot of my joy in life came from success in baseball and sports in general. And I went into my sophomore year a very high potential draft pick. I mean, granted, it never really came to fruition that way, but before that injury, there was some real talk about very early in the draft. And so I was excited. I was pumped. I was on top of the world. And I had a shoulder impingement. And pretty much every time I threw and cycled my arm would bang together, just grind on itself in the shoulder. And so I couldn't even throw, couldn't really wash my hair, nothing. Until got that diagnosed and got it fixed, which didn't take surgery, just took muscles being retrained. But in that time, it took a long time for everybody to figure out why I couldn't throw painlessly and why I was hurting. So in that time, there were a lot of dark moments, just sadness. It was hard to smile on a baseball field. I wasn't allowed to be in the dugout with the guys during the games, most of the games. Couldn't travel. Really, all I could do was take care of my school and work on relationships in my life, you know. I can't even remember. It wasn't a specific day, but at some point, I was sick of being a beaten horse, and so I started just to find joy in other things. Anything I could, I tried to be happy doing anything else to take my mind off of the fact that I couldn't play baseball, and it worked. I mean, I worked on my relationships. I got closer with people in my life. I got closer with God and a little bit there, and I realized that baseball wouldn't last me forever because at that time it seemed I was like, man, I'm never going to be able to throw a baseball again with no pain, and so I had you know, I was forced to grow up there, and so now I take care of my body as best I can. I try to eat right. I mean, I'm taking fish oils. I'm doing anything I can to make sure my body works like a well-oiled machine. And I also don't need baseball to be happy, you know. So a lot of, I would say, triumph came from that injury, even though at the time it seemed like I was taking a big, big loss.
Right.
And, yeah, so anybody going through struggle, no matter how big the struggle is, there can be some joy found. You just got to dig deep and find it. You just got to sit down and think about it. It's most of what is going on inside of our heads is perceived. It's how we perceive a situation. It's how we perceive an experience. And so, in my case, I just, instead of perceiving my injury as I can't play ball, I can't help my team, I'm not going to get drafted, I might not throw again, I perceive this, you know what, hey, at least I have a lot of time to study. I have a lot of time to study for this test and work on my relationships and just find joy in other stuff.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you sharing that, John. I think the point about gratitude and what you're grateful for can help you regain perspective, and that's what you mentioned, and then ultimately where your true identity lies. And when you have a great perspective on that, it then leads to not stressing out about other things, which actually allows you to perform better in all of the roles that you have, right? And ultimately, you became a better baseball player. Obviously, about learning things physically, about things to do and getting your shoulder right and the muscles that needed to be strengthened, because you've told me about that. But ultimately, as a competitor, it's probably put you in the mindset that you're in today, and knowing that you're just going to do the best you can every day and see where that takes you, but knowing ultimately at the end of the day, it's not about balls and strikes, but it's about the impact that you make and leading the best life that you can that God's called you to lead.
Right.
Well, John, I really appreciate it, and thank you. You know, I wish you the best. You're having a great season, and just continue to focus day by day and pray God's blessings upon you. And thank you for sharing some thoughts with us today and taking the time to do that.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, John. Take care. Bye.